You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode of the Fight Disciples podcast is brought to you with our newest sponsors, Brave.com. The privacy browser. I know what you're thinking. What the blooming heck is Brave? Well, basically, it's a super fast internet browser that doesn't stalk you and steal your data. Scary thought, right? So all you lot that are going on these dodgy porn sites, this lot don't even know that you're there. In fact, they're not even bothered that you're there. You'll be absolutely shocked to know the amount of data that you don't even know that you're giving away to some of these browsers. Brave is different. When using it, it feels like Chrome, so you won't notice too much difference. The thing that you will notice, though, is that there won't be any annoying ads popping up or creepy behavioural tracking. You can import your bookmarks with one click, and all your favourite Chrome extensions are also available with Brave. Brave is free to switch over to, and it takes less than 60 seconds. It's available for Mac, Windows, Linux, Android, and iOS, and is available worldwide in over 80 languages. All the perks of fast browsing minus the creepy data stealing. Sign up today for free. You can do that via brave.com/fight and join over 30 million others upgrading their browsing experience. The reason why Brave are speaking to us and partnering with us is, of course, you know full well that Fight Sports content is going now in a different direction. It is coming away from linear broadcasting and into the digital platforms. At the weekend, how many different websites did you tap into to watch your fights? From the PFL to DAZN to various other streaming services, it's best to be safe in those environments, especially when some of these places are asking for your data. Go to brave.com/fight to further enjoy your experience.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 490. We are the Fight Disciples. This one's dedicated to mixed martial arts. Bit of UFC, bit of PFL coming your way, baby, as well. Thank you very much for tuning in. But if it is the first time that you've ever tuned in, we're available on iTunes. Please subscribe there. And if you'd be so kind as to write us a 5-star review on iTunes, it just helps us with our visibility in the iTunes charts. You can get all Android feeds like Spotify and whatever you need, Google Play, on our website, fightdisciples.com. All our social medias are on there, including our YouTube. Please go and subscribe there because there's podcast bits that go up there and interviews that we do with fighters. And of course, our shop is there, which you can buy beer from, and new merchandise is coming your way in the not too distant future. Now then, I'm just going to take a breath because there's quite a lot to talk about. How good is it to have fans back, man? Eh? How good is it having fans back in arenas? It just takes it to the next level. Yeah? 13 fights on the UFC card. We'll start with UFC. 13 fights on that card at the weekend. We only went to the judges on 4 occasions. To be fair, thank God. Thank God we only went there on 4 occasions because I was looking at some of them cards coming in early doors thinking, that fella thinks that's a 10-8. What is going on here? Who's this guy? It was like they dragged some of them judges out of the crowd. There you go. You've won yourself a prize. Get yourself on. You're judging the fights tonight. And they were just going hell for leather on some of the cards that were coming in. So thank God we only needed them on 4 occasions. But the extra 10, 20% that the fans in Florida brought to those fighters,
Oh, mate, I was sat at home with me cock in my hand just enjoying myself. It was amazing. Amazing. Can't wait to be back in there myself.
Yeah, man, that's all I was thinking. I'm watching it thinking, listen to them. Look at these lucky bastards just drinking this in, just fucking bevying away. Woo-hoo! The old Ric Flairs and everything. I was just like, man, that looks like so much fun. And I knew it was going to happen. I just knew. This event, obviously, we talked about it last week. We talked about the fact, we're all over TV talking about it as well. We knew it was going to deliver because it was a sick card anyway. That's what the UFC do. Big events, coming back, boom, let's do a fucking mental card. And just looking down it, you knew there was going to be some highlight reels. But crazy things happen when magic's in the air like that, when fans back. Because the fans themselves, they appreciate it, man. They're like, fuck me. I mean, this is a big moment, a seminal moment in the history of not just the UFC, not just MMA, but in sports in general. In America, the capacity crowd back. We are fucking here. Let's have it. And everyone was just drinking from the Kool-Aid. From start to finish, the card was just absolutely mental. And you come away with performance of the year contender, knockout of the year contender, upset of the year contender, two knockout of the year contenders. Fucking submission of the year stuff, you know, worst fucking moments in the history of the sport with another broken leg. Everything about it. So many narratives, and you're like, shit, the bed. How'd you keep up?
Yeah,
it was
man.
Amazing. It is. This is the UFC at its best. At its best.
Well, I think it's even better than its best. You know, this exceeded all expectations. You get up, you're watching these fights, and you're tweeting about one fight. One fight's just happened, right? So you're tweeting about that fight. You send your tweet out. You're thinking, oh my God, Chris Weidman, blah, 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 and all this type of stuff. And then Valentina Shevchenko's in the octagon, ready to go. You're still tweeting. You're still knocking your tweet out, like interacting with fans that are obviously doing the same thing that you're doing at that time. And then Valentina Shevchenko's in there just being a dominant motherfucker. And you're thinking, oh shit, she's the greatest. And you start tweeting about that. Whilst you're tweeting about that, they've already made the octagon walks for the next fight. And Rose Namajunas has fucking done what she's done. You think, wah! you carry that on. And then obviously what happens in the main event? It was mad. It was just constant. Constant. And it was one-upmanship constantly all the time. It was like going boom, 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 boom. Especially on the main card. The main card is probably one of the best main cards that I have seen. And I'm just going to leave it there. Because every single fight from Anthony Smith and Jimmy Crute all the way through to the main event was just outrageous. Yeah, 20 minutes. It was just outrageous the way that it all just went. It was just madness, mate. Absolute madness. We'll start with the main event.
Well, do you know what it reminded me of, that main card? It reminded me of being in Ibiza in the early noughties.
Yeah.
You know, when it's like 6 o'clock in the morning, you're out on the fucking thing at Space or whatever it is. You're like, woohoo, I've had a good night. This is as good as it's going to get. And you just go, banger. And you're like, oh, this is my tune. This is my tune. And you're dancing around. And then suddenly they go, banger. And you're like, And you know, you think you're fucking the hair on the back of your neck and your balls are tingling. It was just like banger after banger after banger. And you're like, I can't catch my breath. I literally cannot catch my breath to go, what's happening? This is amazing. It's just fucking boom, high after high after high. Honestly, if I'd have had glow sticks, I'd have been fucking waving them in the air. That's how good it was. And I wasn't even in the arena. My goodness. Everyone must have come out of that arena with soiled underwear, man. Everyone must have walked out with soiled undies. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Right.
Sign me the fuck up to get to the event this year, please.
Right, come on. Let's get into the nuances of some of these fights, right? Because I'm going with a big statement early doors. We're going big, yeah? Kamaru Usman is the pound for pound best fighter on the planet right now. Kamaru Usman. The only fighters that can enter this debate right now and challenge that man for the number one spot are Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko. They're the only two fighters that can even get involved in the conversation. Habib's retired, he's gone, right? Yep. Don't give me John Jones. Don't come to me with John Jones and say, John Jones is the pound for pound best in the planet. No. John Jones is most certainly in the conversation for the greatest of all time. That's fine. I've no problem. They're two different conversations. Greatest of all time, pound for pound best. Two totally different conversations. What John Jones did 10 years ago, 5 years ago, is all well and good. But if you're not doing it right now, your argument is diluted when it comes to being the pound for pound best on the planet right now, today. And Kamaru Usman is doing it right now, today. That guy is getting better. I know that it was kind of a weird situation, him leaving his gym and teaming up with Trevor Whitman, but fuck me, the stars have aligned for him, because Trevor Whitman and Kamaru Usman, the partnership off the back of Kamaru Usman's elite level wrestling and his grappling, of which he's has already been part of his life for such a long period of time, all of a sudden now, the dude's got hands and he's looking to finish guys. It's unbelievable how good this guy is right now. I don't think, previous to what I've seen in his last two fights, I thought he was beatable. Genuinely thought he was beatable. I thought there was guys out there that could do things to Kamaru Usman in order to get the job done. Leon Edwards being one of them. Yeah. You know how high I am on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I thought that maybe his striking would have been enough to get the job done against Kamaru. The last two performances against Gilbert Burns and what we saw at the weekend against Jorge Masvidal, it's going to take something special, man. It's going to take something really special to dethrone that fella. He is unreal.
Absolutely incredible. I agree with everything you've just said. You know, and originally when he was with Henry Hooft, when he became champion, you know, and you know, he was undefeated. He had this incredible undefeated run then as well. This 14 fights in the UFC, 17 or 18 fights now consecutively without losing. And he had hands. He was heavy-handed, sorry. Let's say that. He was heavy-handed.
Yeah.
He was a typical wrestler, work his balls off in the gym, super strong, obviously up close, grappling, astounding. And a typical wrestler that he was explosive and he was violent with his strikes, but he wasn't measured and he wasn't accurate. Since moving over to Colorado, he just seems to have completely refined it. And what I love so much is, it's textbook shit as well.
Mm.
But there's no show with him. You know, it's hard really to turn someone into a boxer at a certain point in their lives. You take a kid who's 6 years of age and you drill, 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 then you can make them a textbook fighter, textbook boxer. It's hard to take a guy in his 20s that's already, especially one that's already a champion, and develop him the way he has been developed. You know, I was watching Dan's breakdowns on the BT show, on his own BT show, and he was talking about with Kamaru, there's no drawback, and that's such a big thing, that small drop of the shoulder before you throw a right hand, or even just a bob of the left shoulder before you snap out a jab. To not have that, that's textbook boxing. Their shows, you don't want them, you don't want any shows at all. Kamaru doesn't have any shows. He just snaps the jab straight out like a spear, and that right hand too, it just comes straight out. Unbelievable. And that stepping through motion that he's mastered as well, just shifting his balance of his feet to be able to drive the power through the shot. Absolutely fucking textbook. You know, and I seen a weird tweet from Sergio Moore at the weekend, the former boxing champion, and he was like, I've never really been into fucking UFC, you know, blah blah, the boxing's rudimentary, and a stupid tweet that made little sense. But even he's looking at stuff and going, ah, actually that's the shit. Kamaru Usman's not a boxer. He's not got a... It's not like he's saying that about Conor McGregor, which you'd expect him to, because of Conor's background. And Conor is, you know, a natural striker, a natural fist fighter. This is a wrestler. This is a grappler. This is a guy that has had to learn how to box later on in life. And he's so accomplished now. You know, he could potentially have the best hands in the entire UFC. To be able to have done that, all credit in the world to firstly Henry Hooft, all credit in the world now to Trevor Whitman. You're right. He's getting better and better and better. The problem he's going to have is, how does he get pushed now? Where does the next contender come from? You've just named two there. He looks like he's going to go back in with Colby next.
Yep.
He's already starting to go back through the cycle.
Yeah, man. We've spoken in the past, haven't we, about Justin Gaethje and the way that he strikes, the way that he doesn't waste anything, the way that he's clinical with what he does with his hands. And obviously, he's been working with Trevor Whitman for such a long, long period of time. Again, a guy from a wrestling background.
Yeah.
But Kamaru Usman's, he's been there a year, less than a year. He's mad. He's mad, the development. I mean, he was with him on Fight Island, wasn't he? And that was a short notice change of opponent situation. So we didn't. Maybe he just reverted to type in that fight, the first one with Jorge. The Gilbert Burns fight was the one because he got clipped in it, and then he showed those brilliant powers of recovery, and then put it on Gilbert Burns and took him out. And he took him out in great fashion. At the weekend, it was like you're fighting Jorge Masvidal. Now, Masvidal, from his street fighting background, he is hands. He is the hands of the division, mate. That's what he is. Yeah, you can wrestle him and you can beat him in other parts of mixed martial arts, but he's the hands. And he smoked him. Mate, wow.
I liked the look. I thought Masvidal started well. I was
looking great.
Masvidal's first round.
The fight was good.
Yeah, I thought Usman probably edged the first round, but I thought Masvidal, I even said on commentary, I was like, listen, if I'm team Masvidal, I'm happy with how the first round went. There was spells there where Jorge was in the flow. He was chatting away. He was enjoying himself. His hands was down. He's nice and loose. Tried to fly a knee. He was firing elbows. That's where you want to be. That's when Jorge Masvidal's at his most dangerous, when he's happy, when he's enjoying himself. And he was enjoying himself in that first round. What he didn't appreciate, and now obviously the comments prior to the fight have come back to bite Masvidal in the arse, and that's that he just didn't respect Usman's power. He had his hands low because he thought, even if he catches me, he ain't going to put me out. So I can afford to have my hands low because I know if he hit me, I can hit him back, kind of thing.
The thing is, though,
respecting Usman's power was probably the mistake that he made because, listen, that shot was clean as anything. And
yeah,
you better believe, pulling forward with the left hand, pulling the right hand down of Masvidal, throwing your right hand over the top, that is something they have drilled on pads.
Yeah.
For it to come out like that, kind of, remember how Masvidal was drilling the flying knee that he got Ben Askren with? I guarantee there's footage out there of Trevor Whitman holding pads and Usman pulling that hand down and throwing the right hand over the top. I guarantee it, because it was too beautiful the way he'd done it. It was poetry. It was too perfect the way he just went, whoop, boom.
There was a moment in that first round when he caught Masvidal, and Masvidal's legs wobbled in the first round. He caught him with one of those right hands. So I was surprised at that point, because Jorge, he ate the first one, didn't he? And he laughed at him and he smiled at him. But Jorge's been there, done that, got the T-shirt. He will have known. He will have known. Oh, hang on a minute. There's a bit of something there, you know. It is what it is. It's a phenomenal performance from Kamaru Usman. And he could go on to be quite comfortably this year's Fighter of the Year. He's already had two unbelievable performances. Gilbert Burns, Jorge Masvidal. Both all outrageous finishes. Next up is Colby Covington. The first time that these guys met was outstanding. We were lucky enough to be there, weren't we, to watch this fight at close quarters. It was outrageous. It was good. And he got the job done, and he ended up stopping Colby Covington in that final round. Colby's adamant that he'll be better this time around. He's going to have to be. Colby Covington's going to have to show us something that we've never seen before, ever. Because Kamaru Usman's getting better, and he's showing us week in, week out, day in, day out, that he is getting better. For me, right now, if I'm betting on it, Kamaru Usman wins the fight, and he wins the fight by stoppage. He knocks him out.
Yeah, that knockout should send a stark warning to everybody at 170 and around Kamaru Usman that punch was thrown with such bad intentions. That knockout punch, you know, to teach someone to... It's getting through the mentality of a fighter not to punch someone on the chin. You're not trying to punch someone on the chin or the nose or the head.
Through
You're
it.
Punch through it. Punch through the target. And that's exactly what he did. That right hand went fucking right through Masvidal's face. Flicked the chin back. The sweat goes everywhere. It was like a Hollywood movie finish. And he sent Jorge, you know, to the fucking spirit realm or whatever Jorge likes to use.
Shadow realm,
man. He did that to Jorge Masvidal. Come back and bit him in the ass. And it was just, honestly, I've been a critic of Usman in the past. Just because, listen, man, I say what it is. I love the guy, but he bored me at times. He did not bore me at the weekend. He took the thunder. He took the star power away from Masvidal. He is now the guy, not only in the welterweight division, but he's, for me, he's a pay-per-view draw now. And matching him with Colby Covington makes sense. because you do not take someone that has got the star power now that Usman has taken away from Masvidal and put him in with someone like Leon Edwards, who is unknown outside the UK.
Correct.
You put him in with Colby Covington, who knows how to sell a fight, and you make Usman, you reaffirm his status as the new pay-per-view draw in the welterweight division. Makes absolute sense, man.
Just before we move on to the next fight, just a nice little note on Usman's dad being in the octagon with him after the fight. You saw all his family piling in there, but his dad in particular, and he gave his dad the belt. I think that's the first time that his dad's been able to see him live. He's been at a fight that Kamaru was participating in. And the reason for that is that his dad was incarcerated for a lengthy period of time. Kamaru's always... When I've spoken to Kamaru about this in the past, he's always said, listen, I believe my dad's innocent. You know, he got done for fraud, something to do with some dodgy tax papers or whatever it may be. But he spent a lot of time in prison and a lot of time in jail. And as Kamaru was rising up and coming through the UFC ranks, his dad was aware. And he told me a story once that he used to ask the UFC to not put him on the pay-per-view part of the card, so therefore actually lose money. Don't put me on the pay-per-view part of the card because the jail that my dad's in don't pay... They don't have pay-per-view. They don't pay for the pay-per-view. They only see the undercard, the prelims. Amazing. So please put me on the prelims so my dad can watch me fight. So he was willing to take a pay cut in order just for his dad to see him fight. And that's that was the rise. There became a point, though, where it was impossible. You know, you have to be on the pay-per-view now because you're a superstar. So obviously with the COVID and things like that, I think they had plans for his dad to be at the Burns fight, but I don't think he could attend because of everything that was happening. But obviously with what happened at the weekend, with fans being allowed to be in attendance, Kamaru Usman's dad was allowed to be there, and what a performance. Boy, did his boy live up to the moment. Sensational for Kamaru Usman. Delighted for him because he is a nice lad. He's a top kid. And he came of age at the weekend.
I had a lump in my throat at that point because, you know... just meant so much to the whole family. And obviously you just explained there why it meant so much to Kamaru as well. So it was by that stage, I was done, man. By that stage, I was ready for fucking bed. I was physically and mentally exhausted. And I almost shed a tear there. And that was after Rose Namajunas. And even Rose owned it in her post-fight speech.
Yeah.
She owned the issues with Wiley. And I was like, right, man, thank you so much, Rose, for clearing that up. I can now truly put you back at the top of the pedestal and be a super fan again.
Listen, before we go on that one, just a quick one on Jorge. 2 years ago in London, we interviewed him in the preamble to the Till fight, right? And he was adamant, I am going to fight for UFC gold. Adamant. And I remember being in the room with all the MMA journalists and stuff like that going, okay, we admire your confidence. We admire this. We admire that. But listen, Jorge, you're 33 years of age. You've had 45 professional MMA fights, yeah? You've been out for a year. You're coming off the back of a loss to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And you're telling us that you're going to be fighting for UFC gold. All right, mate. Yeah, cool. Give him the thumbs up and send him on his way. The journey that Jorge Masvidal took us on over the next 12 to 18 months was just unreal. Absolutely unreal. And it'll never be forgotten. 2019 will never be forgotten. What he did with Darren Till, Ben Askren and Nate Diaz in that order. Lucky enough to be a part of all three of those fights. Cage side, commentating on, you name it, we were there, man. We were amongst it. One of the most memorable years covering mixed martial arts. And Jorge Masvidal, Fighter of the Year, was the driving force behind a lot of that. For him to get to the stage of fighting for UFC gold from the stage of where he was at, is truly sensational. And in his 50th MMA fight, it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be. And I don't know where he goes from now. If he calls time, great. I think there's fights out there for him. I think there's some BMF fights out there for him. There was a certain brother, Cage Side, wasn't there at the weekend that might want to dance with a bit of game bread. I mean, I don't think anybody would be against Nick Diaz or even a Nate Diaz rematch for Jorge, but I would love him to get the opportunity to go out on a positive rather than in that moment.
Yeah, he will. He's still a big draw. He's still a big star. Unfortunately for him, the world title dream is done now. He won't get another shot at the world title belt after losing two fights back to back, certainly in the manner in which he lost them as well. So, but as you said, he's it isn't necessarily all about the world title belt in the UFC. There's plenty of money out there for guys who are just marquee names that always turn up and always deliver. And he always delivers. And he has got that BMF belt. And the Diaz brothers are fucking waiting in the wings.
Rose Namajunas. Rose Namajunas. Now then, pre-fight, you've just mentioned it there. Pre-fight, she got it wrong. Yeah. Let's be straight. She got it wrong. And we said it on last week's podcast that she got it wrong. Politicising the fight, bringing communism in, pointing that towards Zhang Weili, even though she said on a couple of occasions it's nothing personal towards her. Listen, at the end of the day, you have seen in America that there's hate crime all over the place aimed towards Chinese people because of what President Trump had been saying about the virus. You know, there's so much of that going on in the States. Therefore, when a UFC elite level athlete says something like what she said, you've got to be held to account to what you're saying, because it's only going to stoke the fires of hate crimes and various things. And that kind of was evident at the start of this fight, because look at that crowd booing Weili.
Got booed.
Come on, man. She's an elite level champion, one of the nicest kids that you're ever likely to meet. She even said at the ceremonial weigh-ins, USA, long time no see, like excited to be there, just a top girl. And for the crowd to react the way that they reacted towards her, I personally think that Rosie's comments had a standing on that as to why we arrived at that place.
Yeah.
And then they shut the cage door and the fight starts, all right? Rose got everything right in the fight. Everything right, man. I mean, I know it didn't last that long, but Rose Namajunas, the lead roundhouse kick to the whiskers. I mean, I can't say anything more about it because it was just elite, elite level. You pointed out last week, you think that when she's at it, she's the best strawweight in the world. She proved it at the weekend, mate. She proved it at the weekend.
Yeah. And all I can say is you're welcome. You know, you're welcome for this knowledge that I share. Week in, week out, these tips that I get. I see
I'm going to admit something. Just wait a minute. I'm going to admit something to you now, right? I'm going to admit something. For people behind, I'm going to let people in behind the scenes. So every single week I send Nick a message saying, listen, don't forget to do your picks video, right? So you'll notice that Nick's doing all the picks videos. So I said, do the picks videos, send them to me. I'll edit them up and I'll put them on the internet, right? And obviously he's a busy guy, but every now and again, they come through by the back end of the week. When the picks video came through, I watched the full UFC one and I went, I'm going to bet on this. I'm going to bet on it. Because he did it with so much enthusiasm and so much vibe, I thought, he's convinced me that this shit's going to happen, so I'm going for it. It was a 90-1 treble, what you said. In the video, you said, Kamaru Usman's going to finish Jorge Masvidal.
Sensational style. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, okay. Rose Namajunas will become the champion again. And within two rounds, Shevchenko will stop Andrade. That's a 90-1 treble. Anyway, go on. Carry on about Rose Namajunas because she was brilliant.
No. Keep going. Keep massaging my ego. She was absolutely outstanding. I think Weili... Speaking to her in the build-up, Weili had said, you know, I asked her if she had a game plan, if there was a certain way, you know, if she was the same since Joanna, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, listen, I'll do what I always do, just feel my way into the fight. And I think the difference was Rose started the fight with a plan. She had a plan to start that fight. She had a plan on how she was going to approach.
I am the best. I am the best. I am the best. I am the best.
And that took me back to... remember in boxing when Steve Collins had fucking Michael McCann, whatever, the hypnotist in his corner?
Yes, for the Eubank fight,
Like, when he fought Eubank and he was like, you know, get you mentally right. That's all that stuff helps. She's standing there, I am the best. Just mantra, chanting. She's got it in her mind. She's fully focused in that moment. She's not entering the fight going, I'll just feel out this first round, see what's happening. She's in there knowing specifically how the fight plays out. Minute by minute, round by round, this is what we're going to do. No doubt they saw an opportunity there to throw a head kick at some stage. And the way she did it was perfect, man, because Weili defends a body kick. Watch the replay. She's ready for that to come at her body because her right hand comes down. But more than that, she scoops her hips back. You actually see her suck her abs in to try and move a body away so the body kick misses it completely. But in doing that, obviously her chin is completely exposed and wide open. The foot comes in, cracks against the jaw, while he's out. And I think her head bouncing off the canvas wakes her back up again. And then obviously Rose jumps on top. While he doesn't know what fucking day it is, never mind what country she's in. It was a great stoppage by the referee. Absolutely no complaint. Obviously, Wiley gets upset afterwards. You know, and Bisping pointed out on our BT Sport Review show, that's because she was asleep. There's a moment in time that she has lost forever because she was not conscious. Mm. So when her brain kicks back in and she goes, what have you stopped it for? I'm here, man. I'm fine. No, man, you were asleep. Rose put you to sleep. It was a remarkable performance. Listen, I've got to be honest. Did I expect it to end like that way? Of course I didn't. Did I expect Rose Namajunas to be better than Wiley? Yes, that's why I predicted it. That's why I said she'd be the new champ.
Yeah.
For her to get a first round head kick finish like that, Jesus Christ, man. This girl is incredible. Incredible. There's brilliant opponents out there for her. Carla Esparza's fighting Yao Zhaonin. That would have been an eliminator to fight Wiley. I think it's now an eliminator to fight Rose. Either China gets one back against Rose or Carla Esparza versus Rose. Great narrative. Esparza beat Rose in Tough to become the first ever strawweight champion. That's the fight now. That's the eliminator. I think that's in May. Whoever wins that will fight Rose next. Amazing. The big loser is your girl, Joanna, because you can't flog a third fight with Joanna, who lost to Wiley. That's lost twice to Rose. Mm. Sorry, Joanna, you're at the back of the queue. No, that third fight's not happening anytime soon. So
yeah. And Joanna's, I think she's 0-4 in title, her last four title fights, man. So like you said, the narrative's not there. It's not there at all. No. History-making night as well. We must point out that Rose Namajunas became the first female in UFC history to regain a world title. You know, it's never been done before. People lose and then that's it. They move on. And don't get me wrong, people have fought for vacant titles and gained vacant titles that way. But she lost her title to Andrade and regained it in sensational fashion against Wiley. Tell you, man, what a fighter. I've always said, and we've always said on this podcast, haven't we? Her biggest thing is what goes on between her ears. That's it.
Yes.
If she gets that right, she's at it. And Jesus Christ, mate, if she can stay in this frame of mind now and obviously embrace being champion, because last time she didn't enjoy it, mate. She didn't enjoy it and she had a real trouble with it as a young person. Now, she seems a lot more mature and in a better state of mind to be able to deal with it. Hopefully she can, because she's got an opportunity now off the back of the pre-fight stuff, the way that she dealt with it post-fight, I thought was great, really good. She's got an opportunity now to unite a lot of people with mixed martial arts and understanding the power that she does have with her words, and fingers crossed she can do that.
Yeah. I think a lot of it now as well will be on her management, on Pat Barry, Trevor Whitman, the people around her, to manage her time and manage the UFC's expectations of her time as well, because you can be champion on your terms, especially when you produce performances like that. You don't have to be pulled from pillar to post. You don't have to be necessarily at the UFC's beck and call all the time. Maybe that was the issue first time around, to hear someone realize their dreams and become UFC champion, world champion, and not enjoy it is quite concerning. But I think when you get a second stab at it, it gives you the opportunity to come away and go, okay, why am I working towards becoming that again when I didn't enjoy it? Well, the reason I didn't enjoy it wasn't necessarily for this issue. It was for that issue. And maybe that issue in terms of Rose might have been the fact that she had so much extra media commitments, so much pull on her time. Whereas I think this time around, you know, to get back to the summit again, back to the top of the mountain, this time she'll want it on her terms. This time she'll be like, right, this is how it's going to work now. I'm the champion. And you get me, you know, 2 days a month when I'm not in fight camp to do media. Book in them 2 days as much as you like. But the other 28 days, 29 days in a month, I am unavailable. And I think that's the way they'll probably manage Rose and her time, because nobody should achieve their dreams and not enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd like to get there, man. Enjoy it while you're there.
It did feel like the weight of the world had come off her shoulders as well. Like pre-fight, I interviewed her pre-fight and she was up. She was tense, you know what I mean? With a lot of the things and the questions that I were throwing her way. But I saw her obviously speak to Rogan straight after the fight, and then I saw her speak to Caroline Pierce straight after the fight. She seemed back to old Rose. which is good to see. And hopefully she can stay in that. She can stay like that. You know what I mean? Because that will obviously help with the enjoyment of becoming the UFC champion. Great performance, man. Now, I'm not one for harping on about trilogies, especially when the person I'm campaigning for right now is 2-0 against. Yeah, exactly. But it just makes perfect sense, man. I think we pointed out on the BT show as well that it makes perfect sense for the person that is 2-0 up in this trilogy as well, because there's no other challenges for these girls anywhere. Valentina Shevchenko has dominated at 125. She's too good for everybody. I thought Andrade might ask her a few more questions at the weekend. But the best thing that I can say about Valentina Shevchenko is that she's got that John Jones thing about her. Whereas Jones, when he was a younger guy, he wouldn't necessarily just implement his own game plan and nullify other people. He'd look at what you do and then he'd try and beat you at what you do. If you're a wrestler, we're going to wrestle. Okay, I'll wrestle you. I'll show you how good I am. You're a jiu-jitsu guy, yeah? Okay, cool, man. Let's do some submissions. You want to strike? We'll strike. Shevchenko does that. Shevchenko's looking at other the people that she's fighting and going, right, Andrade is a little powerhouse. Everybody thinks that she's going to out-grapple me. Watch this. I'm like, what is she doing? She's picking her up and whizzing her around this octagon. I'm thinking, Shevchenko's different level, man. If she was just maybe 5 pounds heavier, you know what I mean? Naturally, if she was just an extra 5 pounds, her and Nunes would be unreal. Because that's where it's at right now. It's a size thing. It's a size thing that is causing the victories in Nunes' favour. Not, don't get me wrong, Nunes is a brilliant fighter and brilliant technician, but the size is helping.
Yes. The difference with Nunes and Shevchenko is the fact that Nunes has to cut down to get down to bantamweight. She has to cut down to get to featherweight. So after she's weighed in, she will blow up again. Valentina Shevchenko, I guarantee she probably walks around 6 or 7 pounds over the flyweight limit. She's probably not even a bantamweight when she's not in camp. She's never not in camp.
Yeah.
This is her life. You know, I spoke to her this week and obviously people may have seen I basically proposed to her because she is my crush. And even Jane said on a Sunday morning when she got up, she was like, I was last night. I was like, yeah, you know, great, amazing, what a night, fuck me, brilliant. And she just went, how did your crush get on? I'm like, she was amazing. But when BT Sport put it out on social media, here's the interview with Valentina, here's Nick basically proposing to her. Jane was one of the first people that comment going, so is this wife number two, is it? And she knows, man. She knows. I've got a big thing for Valentina Shevchenko. She was amazing. And I just think the issue that she's got in terms of fighting Amanda Nunes for the third time will be the same issues that we're highlighting now. She's not a bantamweight. She doesn't even walk around at bantamweight. She's never out of camp to allow her body to grow that much because she's a 24/7 martial artist. This is all she does. She said that to me. I haven't got time for she hasn't got time for a boyfriend because this is all she does. Travels the world, training at gyms with a sister and a coach, training martial arts. She's done it for 20 years.
Yep.
She's got no ambition to stop anytime soon. And she wants to get better and better and better. If she is going to have that trilogy fight with Amanda Nunes, if she were to win that fight, good conversation's done.
Oh, stop it. Stop. What are you going on about now, man?
Amanda Nunes is the GOAT now. She's the GOAT now. But we're talking about a girl from the weight division below, naturally, moving up and beating her, even though she's outsized, outstrength. And the second fight was close, man.
Split yeah.
decision.
Yeah, I agree. Some people think that she won it.
Yeah, man. Woo! Tell you what. Shower me down.
Listen,
watch it every week.
I'm all good for the just binning the belts off, let them other divisions just play out and just have the championship of Shevchenko and Nunes. Let's do 12 of them, one a month for the next year, and then we'll call the goat off the back of it. Yeah, that's what we should do. And on certain occasions, Amanda's got to boil down to 130, right? We've got to do it a catch weight. She has to.
That would be amazing. If Amanda Nunes, the problem is I don't think she'd get down to 130, but
a
catch weight for me would be golden, absolutely golden. But why would Amanda Nunes do that?
Yeah. Three world title fights, all living up to expectation, all with serious ramifications for pound-for-pound lists and GOAT conversations and all that type of thing. and nothing but excitement going forward for all those champions. And then
champions,
and all that came off the back of one of the most horrific injuries that you're ever likely to see in any sport whatsoever. I remember being a kid watching watching David Boost for Coventry City and his leg at Old Trafford, and you saw Peter Schmeichel, the Manchester United goalkeeper, throwing up on the pitch because it was just a horrific injury. His leg went one way and what have you. I remember being at a Blackburn Rovers game when Graham Lassaw, the left-back, got his foot stuck in the ground and it literally come off and went the other way and twisted round. Just horrific to see. Everybody, you were kiteside for the Anderson Silva incident against Chris Weidman, and such a freaky turn of events that we've only ever seen this happen on three occasions, and Chris Weidman's been involved in two of them. Obviously, on the receiving end of this one at the weekend, the first strike of the fight against Uriah Hall, the very first strike, and his leg just wrapped round his shin. The worst bit about it. I'm sure you've seen it now. If you're an MMA fan, you've most certainly seen it. Or even if you're just on social media, you will have seen this incident. The worst bit about it is when he steps back to step on it.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about it.
The kick's the kick. But then when he goes to step, oh my days, everything just goes, doesn't it? Your whole body just goes with him. And listen, I've seen the post from his wife on social media. Seen Chris in hospital giving it the thumbs up and what have you. You just wish a recovery. You just wish that he can come and have, his life can just go back to normal. We'll deal with fighting later. We'll deal with a career later. Let's just get back to being able to walk again and everything being sound, man, because breaks like that are no joke. That's serious. It's a serious, serious injury.
Especially at 36 years of age, and it was horrific, and it was cruel, man. And that's life, innit? You know, the irony of it coming back around, you know, the exact same thing. Anderson Silva throws a kick, he checks it. Anderson Silva's leg smashes to bits. He throws a kick, Uriah Hall checks it, his leg smashes to bits. Like, it's unbelievable. You couldn't script it. If you said it was going to play out like this, people would say it was a fucking joke. There's no way. Three times we've had broken legs in the UFC. I don't even like thinking about it. And my reaction on the live, I think BBC put it out, my reaction on doing live commentary was the same as John and the same as Jack Shaw. The three of us just couldn't even look. Even Jack's a fighter, and even he looked away. That's how bad it was. It was terrible. And as you say, you can only wish the best for him. Yeah. My fear now, 36 years of age, what's he got to come back for? You know, no. His legacy's assured. That's the good thing. He's Hall of Fame, man. He'll go in the Hall of Fame. Yep. The guy who beat Anderson Silva twice, the former champion, you know, the title run. I think he had two or three defenses, most all against Brazilians before he ran into Luke Rockhold. Yeah, man. I just think it's a hot... He'd moved to Carolina with his family, hasn't he? Because there's a relationship there with Wonder Boy. He was in his corner at the weekend. Fresh start, fresh look, you know, new team, blah, blah, blah. Loved it, man. He was talking, he was making sense, and he was saying good things. This is a good push. I'm ready. I want to go again. I'm revitalized. Now it's completely throw that out the window. Now it's just a conversation about, do you need it? Does your body need it? Do your family need you to go through it again? You know, at this stage of your life, can you not just be content with your status in the sport and move on with your life? And I think they're the questions, they're the conversations he's going to be having.
Mm.
Hard to watch, man.
Very hard, man. And kudos to Uriah Hall to be able to find the words that he found in that particular moment, because he will have had incredible frustrations, because this was a big fight for him too. Let's not forget, this was one of those fights where both guys, off the back of a win, then enter the conversation of fighting somebody in that top five to challenge the champion. You know, that's the magnitude of this particular fight. And obviously for it to end in 17 seconds, no strikes thrown from Uriah Hall, that horrific injury to Chris Weidman, for him to be able to find the words in that particular moment, deal with it the way that he dealt with it, and I thought was classy, really, really classy. And I hope that it doesn't affect him too much. and that he can get back in the octagon sometime soon and be pushing his own career on in the right direction. Really good from him. I saw some people referring to two injuries, right? At the weekend, and I'm now obviously moving on to the Anthony Smith and Jimmy Crute fight. So I saw loads on social media going, oh my days, you know what I mean? Two horrific freak moments and all this type of stuff. Hang on a minute. No. There's only one. There's only one horrific freak moment for me, and that's the Chris Weidman one. Weidman throws the shot, breaks his leg. That's an injury. Wasn't meant to happen. The fight finishes there. What happened to Jimmy Crute was caused by Anthony Smith. That's as good as a right hand landing on someone's whiskers, man. That's basically what that was. It's all part of the game. We're seeing it more and more and more. Those low calf kicks with a perennial nerve on the outside of the leg. You clip that, then all of a sudden you incapacitate your opponent. That's the whole part of the game. And then you end up winning the fight. Just because the doctor stopped it doesn't mean that it's any less of a victory. It's a legit viable victory for Anthony Smith. He caused it with that kick, and Crute could not continue. End of chat. Great victory for Anthony Smith.
Yeah, it's funny because you're right. It does seem like it's just come in. I don't remember any time, you know, prior to 18 months ago, I don't remember any time of this happening, of this kick causing someone's leg to go dead. And now we've had three high-profile cases in the UFC with Chito Vera, Dustin Poirier, and obviously now Anthony Smith, all creating injuries. Creating the leg to go dead from a kick. It's not an injury. It's a, you know, you're forcing that action, as you said, man. Like clipping someone on the chin. Absolutely viable. Listen, Jimmy Crute, how the fuck he wanted to carry on, I know he's a fighter. I know the bread does differently from the rest of us. I know the wired differently from the rest of us. But even he must have looked down and thought, I can see me leg, but I can't feel me leg. And he's trying to walk forward, and his foot was dragging behind him like he had a zombie leg. Like his leg has become something out of the fucking Walking Dead. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm fine. No, you're not fine. Your leg is dead. Like, your foot is literally dragging behind you. You're not fine. You know, anyone else in any walk like, oh, shit, what's happened to me leg? And Jimmy Crute's like, yeah, man, it's cool. Get out the cage. I'm fine. Let's go. Like, what the fuck? Save him from himself, man. Listen, of course, Jimmy Crute can come again. The beauty of an injury like that and a defeat like that, a TKO of that nature, the beauty of it is, similar to Conor, similar to Sean O'Malley, the fighter comes away from it going, well, other than block that shot, other than maybe defending it, other than not taking it the way it did, it was out of my control, that TKO. There's nothing I could have done there. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't have continued. I couldn't have fought on. Conor may be slightly different, but I couldn't have fought on because I had a serious ailment. One of my limbs was now rendered useless. That's what I can do about that. And I can they take comfort. You know, it doesn't smash away at your confidence like getting chinned and getting wiped out can do. And you go, oh, shit, my God, have my whiskers gone? Can I take a punch anymore? You can kind of come away and go, well, that's never happened to me before in 20 years of fucking training, fighting. It was a freak occurrence. I'm cool, man. It won't happen next time. Yeah. That's the beauty of an injury like that, of a loss like that, in terms of Jimmy Crute. It won't affect his development. Yes, it's probably knocked him back another fight or two on his campaign to become a contender at 205, but it won't really knock him. We know he's going to get there eventually. We know he's got bags of ability. It was nice for Anthony Smith, man, because this guy's a veteran. He's had a hard time against top contenders. He had a good win last time out, but he jumped at the chance to face Jimmy Crute, a fight that I guarantee not many people in the top 10 were like, oh, go on, I'll jump in for Johnny Walker and take him on. The fucking won't have been many. So all the credit in the world for Anthony Smith to go on, yeah, man, give me that fight. Because up until the stoppage with the leg kick, he looked great anyway. His jab was fucking awesome.
Oh, mate. Unreal jab. Unbelievable.
What was it? Street Fighter? Was it Dowlin? Whoop! With the big long arms and the long legs. That's what Anthony Smith's jab was like. Whoop! Jimmy Crute's on the opposite side of the cage getting fucking jabbed in the face going, how long are his arms? That's what it looked like. Anthony Smith was just, whoo! I thought he looked good, man. And he's a nice guy, so good on him.
Yeah, fair play to him, mate. Who won between Jake Paul and DC, do you think?
for you kidding, aren't you? Jake Paul TKO every fucking time.
Get out! On Daniel Cormier, get out, mate. Cormier.
I'm talking about who won in the promote myself at your expense stage.
All right, it was a TKO
shutout for Jake Paul, just being at the event. That's why I retweeted his post. I'm like, mate, all credit to you. You starch fucking Ben Askren, and what you do, you jump on a jet and you get to the very next event, UFC you're hosting, and you get ringside and you get a 15,000 capacity crowd for the first time in 14 months in that arena to fucking hate you and chant fuck off Jake Paul or whatever it was. Mate, that guy's a little genius. He may look like a dickhead.
I love that DC left his commentary position to go and get in his face, man. But again,
it's what he wanted.
It's exactly what he wanted. DC played right into his hands. He went over there, got into his face. It's gone viral. Mate, like you say, he's a marketing genius, that kid. Marketing genius. So many fights to talk about on the undercard as well. We're not going to go over everything, mate. Not going to go over everything because we've got so many other things to be talking about. But a great card. 261, fans back in the arena. It was unbelievable. If you've not seen the fights that we're talking about, once the podcast has finished, get yourself on BT or wherever you consume your stuff and go and watch it because everything was amazing.
Weidman injury, just to let you know, if you haven't seen
Don't watch that. Sorry, don't watch that bit.
It's basically, remember when we were kids, the TV advert for round cheese fruit pastels and you had to put them in your mouth and don't chew it. And you couldn't resist. You can't resist chewing a fruit pastel. Chris Weidman, I dare you. Don't look away.
Oh, mate.
How manly are you? How tough are you? Don't look away. I guarantee you've got to look away. Even thinking about it now, I want to look away. Ugh, horrific.
It's a bad one. Massive apologies to all Fight Disciples, because on last week's show, I was telling you about a deal that I'd done to stream the PFL on our website, right? The deal was done. So what was going to happen is that I was going to take embed the event for Friday night on our website, and therefore you can watch it. Off the back of me announcing that on the old podcast, the people that I'd done that deal with then got in contact with me, said, yeah, great, we're still going to go ahead. So you put this on your website, blah, 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 and then it'll redirect them to our pay-per-view. And I'm going, whoa, eh? What are you talking about? Redirect to pay-per-view. I've checked on the PFL website, and people in France, people in Belgium, people all over the world are watching this for free. What are you up to? Oh, yeah, we're putting it behind a paywall. Eh? So in the UK, the people that had managed to acquire the rights to the PFL, and I don't know why the PFL gave it to them, decided to then put that behind a paywall. So it wasn't the PFL. I just want to point that out. The PFL didn't put it behind a paywall. The people that got the rights off the PFL put it behind a paywall. And I told them to go and jog on. I said, we're not having fucking anything to do with that. That's ridiculous. I'm not charging people for it. Especially when I've been on the podcast and said that you can have it for nothing. So I apologise. There was a bit of disappointment throughout the course of the week, but it was taken out of my hands. I did, though, to every single person that messaged me, showed them a way of how they could watch it. All right? That's all I'll say. So anybody that messaged me directly, I hope you enjoyed it. That's all I'll say. All right. Because I was on the radio Friday night and I was so worried that I'd miss Brendan, because I knew that they were putting him on at a friendly time zone for UK fight fans, because he was on early at the start of the main card. I legged it home, got home just in time for the end of the fight, just before Brendan. I'm thinking, time is perfect. Even though I had to watch it on a laptop, which is a bit of a shit, and I wanted to put it on the TV and what have you. Watching it on my laptop, honestly, mate, I was more nervous than him. I was more nervous than he was. He's walking to the octagon, and I'm thinking, to the cage, should I say, and I'm thinking, he's not fucking arsed, this lad. He's not arsed at all. I was shitting my pants, because I know what Shaman Marais is. I know exactly what he is. I know the level that he's at. And Brendan's been out for such a long period of time. I'm thinking, please, please, please. You know what I mean? Just be right tonight. Just be at it tonight. At it? Shit the bed. Shit the bed, was he at it. He went out there. Sure. The finish is always going to get the highlights. Yeah, the finish is, it's the, that's the thing that's going to steal it and go around the world and be the viral moment. If you haven't watched the whole fight, it's unbelievable. Everything about what Brendan does in this fight to Sherman Moraes is unreal. His kicks, his jab, his punches, the setups, everything about it is like, who's the guy here that's been in the UFC? Who's the guy? He dominated him, absolutely dominated him, and then smoked him. Then,
that was the best thing.
Then, no mate, the best thing is then getting on the microphone, he's saying, I'm the fucking underdog. Are you lot, what are you lot smoking? What are you smoking? I'm the real deal. This is my world, lads. Line them up. I'll do them all on the same night. Bring them in. Unbelievable, mate. Start to finish, Brendan Loughnane dominated and took over the PFL on Friday night. Brilliant, mate. Brilliant.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, all credit in the world to him. And as you say, he's been out for a long time, but he hasn't been out of camp.
No.
As we know, he's set up camp in fucking Thailand. Then he was in Dubai. And he hasn't stopped. He hasn't stopped training right through the lockdown. He's been all over the world. And he deserves all the credit in the world for that. And he looks sensational. And he deserved a moment like this. It's just a shame more UK fans didn't get a chance to see it.
Furious.
You know, diabolical. Because what played into his hands, of course, is the fact that the four fights that followed, all tournament fights as well, all went the distance.
Yeah.
He had the viral moments. The PFL had one thing to promote virally at the weekend, and that was Brendan Loughnane's performance. I thought he was incredible. And hopefully, somewhere, someone waved a laptop or an iPad or a mobile phone under Dana's nose, and he just got reminded of what he could have had.
Yeah.
Because I think performances like that, it won't be long until we're talking about Brendan on BT Sport, put it that way.
Well, listen, man, I think I might have put this out on social media or whatever. I was talking to somebody about it in the immediate aftermath. Brendan Loughnane, right now, is a top 15 UFC featherweight. I'll go as far as to say that. Off the back of that, look at you smiling at me, right? Off the back of that performance, he's a top 15 featherweight. Bottom end at the moment, but he's in that top 15. Don't! Join in now. Join in. Anyway, PFL, it is on like Donkey Kong. I'll tell you what is a bit of a surprise. Lance Palmer got beat. He's a guy that is obviously 10-0 in the PFL. Got beat off Bubba Jenkins. Bubba Jenkins, I thought, was brilliant. Really good. Good performance from him. But I was surprised that Lance, he looked a touch flat, actually, in this fight. And he's a guy that has won the last two. So he's up against it now in this particular tournament. One thing that we've got to fucking mention, mate, is Claire Collard. Jeez. Mm. This guy, right, has been in the world of he is from the world of MMA. I'm not even going to say that. He's just a fighter. So he's been in boxing. He's been the star of Top Rank's bubble, I suppose, if that's how we're going to call it. He's been beating dudes up in the boxing ring. He's now just beaten the former UFC lightweight champion. He's just beaten him. And he beat him good. Yeah, he took a couple of clips himself, but he beat him good. Claire Collard, man. He's just an ultimate fighting machine, that guy. Where's he going next? Bare knuckle? What's he doing? I don't know what he's up to, this kid. Unbelievable performance against Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, man. Proper fighting, man. I love it.
Hmm. Right, let's have a bit of news, shall we? You're not going to like this. You're not going to like it at all. So Dana White's been on the Bill Simmons podcast. It's a really good podcast. Bill Simmons, a veteran of the broadcasting game over in the States, and Dana White was on there. It's mainly about betting, sports betting, American sports betting, but Dana White was on there talking about the UFC and various things. And he reveals that Derek Lewis is going to be next for Francis Ngannou. Reason being is because they can't come to a deal with John Jones because John Jones wants $30 million guaranteed. Jones has responded off the back of this, by the way, saying, who's told you that I wanted $30 million? I've never told you that. I've never told Hunter that, the lawyer of the UFC. I've just been told, no, this ain't happening. The money's not right. We need to come to the right place for the right money and I'll take the fight. So who knows who to believe right now, but it looks like the UFC are moving in the direction of Derek Lewis. Or Danny's maybe just putting something out there for leverage. I don't know. But right now, it doesn't look like we're any closer to getting Francis Ngannou and John Jones.
Which is shite, because the first fight with Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou, still burns a hole in the back of my brain. So ain't nobody on it. Listen, Dana ain't daft. Dana doesn't want to see that either. This is leverage to get John Jones back to the negotiating table to get this fight sorted. They've got to deliver it now. They've got to deliver John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. UFC know it. John Jones knows it. Francis Ngannou knows it. Derek Lewis is just merely a financial puppet at this point. If they actually confirmed Ngannou versus Lewis, it'd be embarrassing. It'd be embarrassing for the UFC and it'd be embarrassing for Dana that he couldn't get a fight over the line that the fans want to see. Because that's what they build on. The whole thing is we deliver the fights you want to see.
I thought you were in charge of matchmaking anyway at the UFC now.
Well, I'm...
Or is it tournament?
Weight divisions.
All right.
I'm tournament commissioner, yeah. It's like Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard, they divvy it up, don't they? Sean, they have different weight divisions that they look after. I'm just a tournament guy.
Okay.
So, you know. But if I was involved, I'd just pay John Jones whatever the fuck he wants because I want to see him fight Francis.
Part of that podcast as well is that he started talking about the middleweight division, Dana. And he says that Marvin Vettori is going to be the next fight for Israel Adesanya. And the reason for that, and I have no problem with this at all. I want to see Robert Whittaker, Israel Adesanya. Of course I do. That's the fight that I want to see. Izzy's come out and he says, I want to fight in June. That's what Israel Adesanya has said. And that's fair enough because he's coming off the back of a defeat to Jan Błachowicz. We know that Izzy likes to be active. We know that he likes to fight. So for him to go back down to middleweight and defend his crown there, and he wants him to do it in June, brilliant. Sound. I want the champion to be active. Robert Whittaker's just fought last week, hasn't he? Right? So therefore, the situation for him is that he's got to leave America. He's got to go back to his homeland, of which he's got this mad, crazy quarantine, of which I think he's still in a hotel right now. So he's still not gone home yet. He comes out of that, and I'm sure he's going to want some downtime with his family. He's got a young baby there as well. He's going to want that downtime. And by the time he's out of that quarantine, that's May. So we're asking him to come back in 6 weeks to fight Israel Adesanya. That just don't work, man. That doesn't work for his time frame. And it sadly doesn't work for our time frame. So as long as Robert Whittaker doesn't have to wait or he's made to take any more fights, I am completely cool with Israel Adesanya running it back with Marvin Vettori in June and then maybe October, something like that, that we get him versus Robert Whittaker. That's hopefully the way that plays out.
Yeah, and to be honest, that fight really needs to happen in Australasia as well. It needs to happen in either in New Zealand or in Australia because it's a huge fight for that part of the world, you know. And they had the first fight. I think Robert Whittaker as well, you know, wasn't in the right frame of mind for the first fight. That's evident. So I think it's good that he's being selfish and like, yeah, man, because it ain't going anywhere. No one's jumping above Robert Whittaker when Robert Whittaker's fit and ready and active. No one's jumping above him in the title picture. So... good on him for going, nah, man, that doesn't work for me. Crack on. But also good for the UFC that they've just gone, cool, man, sound. We will crack on. And there's the guy that's just won. Obviously, as soon as I seen the announcement, I'm like, motherfucker, if only Till hadn't have got injured, he'd have starched Vettori, and we'd now be talking about Till Adesanya in June, and we'd have been on our way to Vegas.
Yeah, whilst I've got you in a commissioner matchmaking role, We mentioned it earlier on, Nick Diaz. What do you do with him? Because there's chat about Hamzat, there's chat about a couple Masvidal. Of other names going on. You'd do Masvidal, would you? That's what you do?
Masvidal, 100%. 100% Masvidal, yeah. 100%. For the BMF belt.
Every single person listening to this podcast has just gone, yes, that's why he's the commissioner.
Diaz versus Masvidal, part two, with an asterisk. Ish. It's the other Diaz.
It's the other Diaz.
The BMF belt. Come on, man. There's only a handful of fighters that truly qualify to contest the BMF belt. And the Diaz brothers are fucking in that equation. So, yeah, man, do it. Do it. Do
Book
it.
It. Book it.
Yeah, man.
Fights this week. We have got some belters. Look ahead towards Wednesday because these one shows, I'm really enjoying these one shows. There's some mad little fights on there, and especially with the time zone, I'm there, like, obviously just tossing it off on a Wednesday morning. Brilliant. Just watching people belt the shit out of each other. Eddie Alvarez is back. I apologise for pronunciation now. I'm going to go for it. Ro Yun Okay versus Eddie Alvarez. That's on the Wednesday card. The big fight is the one at the top of the bill, though. Orlang and Sang versus... I'm sure this isn't the original fight. Renier de Ridder is I think has stepped in at quite short notice there to take on Ong Lang Yisang, who is unreal, by the way. Lang Yisang is fucking... Trust me, if you can get a little bit of a look in on one, which I think will be Wednesday morning here in the UK, check it out because it'll be brilliant. We've got some Friday night action where Rory McDonald is in action for the PFL, taking on Curtis Millender. Again, well worth checking out just because it's Rory McDonald and he always brings us a nice fight. Let's see if his nose goes in the first couple of seconds to make it even more interesting. And then Saturday night, here we go. Light heavies are on lockdown. Because Dominic Reyes is back in action against Yuri Prozhachka. This guy's a lunatic. Prozhachka's a lunatic. Absolute nutcase. He rose to fame. He's rose to fame here in Europe. A lot of people have known about him in Europe, but the big UFC fans found out about him on Fight Island last year when he absolutely smoked Volkan Uzdemir. Nobody smokes Volkan Uzdemir. Nobody. Prozhachka, with his really weird, tricky style, came in, landed one on the whiskers, and put Uzdemir out. What a fight this is. And I'll tell you something. If Prozhachka can beat former world title challenger Dominic Reyes, he might be the one after fucking Teixeira, you know.
Yeah, man, he's in the mix.
Battle of Europe. Prozhachka, I mean, if Błachowicz can come through Teixeira, it's the perfect narrative. Yeah. Błachowicz versus Prozhachka. Wow, what a fight.
March 02, main event.
Mate, they ain't doing that in London. They're doing that in Poland or something, you fucking idiot. They ain't coming here.
Nah. London, 02, mark my words.
Mate, they'll do 60,000 fans in Poland. They ain't coming to the O2 Arena.
Would actually, yeah, they would. Yeah, man, I can't wait to watch him because he's just mad as a box of frogs, isn't he? And he fights that exact same way. Seen on social media.
Yeah.
He's had his hair cut like Tong Pao, hasn't he? From
Kickboxer. Yeah.
It's that fucking high, big dread thing and the rest of his head shaven. He just looks like a crazy motherfucker street fighter. And for that reason, how can you not want to dive in? And Dominic Reyes is a guy that's been there, done it. Wrongly, people said that he beat John Jones. He didn't. Came up short, obviously, against Jan Błachowicz. He's got to stop the skid now, and he's going in there with a guy that's completely and utterly unorthodox. You just don't know what Prozhachka is going to do. So it's a cracking main event, absolutely cracking main event, and I'm expecting fireworks from the very first bell because fucking Yuri's involved.
Your mate's on the... is he in the co-main cup? Is he in the co-main?
Cubby's in the co-main against Chikadze. I love Cubby Swanson, man, and he's obviously an absolute veteran of the game right now, but just seems to have been around forever. Brilliant, great to interview. And he's had a real revival. You know, it wasn't too long ago we were punching his fucking ticket out of the UFC after, I think it was 4 back-to-back losses. Then he beats Cron Gracie. And last time out, he beat Pineda, the back end of last year. And suddenly he's back in the mix again now. But Chikadze is no joke, man. This is
Chikadze. I like Chikadze. I think his kicks and everything about him is brilliant, mate. He's really good.
He just looked absolutely outstanding last time out with that performance of the night win against Jamie Simmons or whatever it was. He was brilliant that night. He completely stole the show. That was on the Santos Teixeira undercard. He was magnificent and went up in everyone's estimation. So it looks to me like they're trying to lay up Cubby a little bit for him. Mm. But Chikadze will soon find out that Cubby Swanson's no layup, man.
Mm. There you have it. Super stuff. If you haven't seen UFC 261 as of yet, now's the time to, obviously, we're finishing the podcast, so you're more than welcome to leave us and go and find a stream somewhere and go and watch all those fights once again because they were absolutely brilliant.
Don't look away.
Look away. It's horrific. Thank you very much for listening to us. It's been a pleasure. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Our website is fightdisciples.com. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.